This episode is sponsored by SiriusXM. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment, and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood, where you get news from every source, where you can hear the newly launched Fish Radio in addition to Jam On, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and much more, where you can listen to top comedy channels such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix's Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN and more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just $1. Visit SiriusXM.com/jambase to see offer details and to subscribe, and start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Jambase Podcast, which is proudly a part of the Osiris Podcast Network. I'm Scott Bernstein, and I'm excited to be joined for the rundown by longtime Jambase contributor, Chad Bernson. How's it going, Chad?
Hey, Scotty. It's an honor to be here.
Glad to have you. And this episode begins with the rundown, and then Jambase's Andy Kahn hosts a tour story segment featuring bluegrass legend Del McCurry. We start with a recap of the first My Morning Jacket concert since March of 2018, which took place on Friday, August 2nd and Saturday, August 3rd at Red Rocks Amphitheater in Morrison, Colorado. Jambase had contributor Billy Jack Sinkovic on hand at Red Rocks, or as MMJ frontman Jim James called it, the birth canal of the universe. And I can't recommend reading his reviews highly enough. The Louisville Rockers' first shows in 17 months featured 45 different songs in total, as the Jacket went repeatless over the course of the two-night stand. While the band didn't play any covers, they did insert jams on Get Back, Imagine, Lean on Me, within Steam Engine, and reprised Get Back and Imagine, played a snippet of Hey Jude within Phone Went West, and these both took place during Saturday's finale. Some of the highlights that Billy Jack pointed out were the 27-plus minute Dandante, the tear-inducing Wonderful, celebratory rocker Anytime, and extended Magida from Friday, as well as the aforementioned versions of Steam Engine and Phone Went West from Saturday. He also pointed out the wild second part of Touch Me, I'm Going to Scream, and the storyteller's version of Bermuda Highway from Saturday. As for the differences between the two shows, Sinkovic wrote, "If Friday night was polished and bright, then Saturday night was dark and raw, filled with ghosts and blades. After all, you can't have shadow without light." We'll see what the band has in store for their two remaining 2019 shows, which take place Friday, August 9th at the Cap, and on Saturday, August 10th at Forest Hill Stadium. Now, Chad, you had the pleasure of seeing Warren Haynes as part of his extremely rare solo tour that took place at the end of July. Can you tell us a bit about that experience?
Thanks, Scotty. And yeah, these were special shows. You know, Warren, legendary in our scene, of course, not least for Government Mule and the Allman Brothers Band, tucked a handful of solo or near solo shows in the Northeast in between Mule tours, including a show at Newport Folk Festival with a bunch of guests, a duo show with Grace Potter at the Peach, and where I saw him, two solo engagements at the West Hampton Beach Performing Arts Center out in the Hamptons. This is an amazing format to see Warren, and a rare one. I mean, so often the emphasis is on his guitar chops, and he did play plenty of guitar in West Hampton, but Warren's solo is always a good chance to hear Warren the singer, first and foremost. And we had to figure, you know, he'd go pretty wide and deep across all of his associations, and he did. You know, he played a lot of Mule and Allmans, including some fairly obscure stuff that got the Warren connoisseurs going, to songs associated with the Grateful Dead, Los Lobos, Van Morrison, and a bunch of tunes from Ashes and Dust, the Americana album he put out a few years ago. Highlights for me were hearing New Year's Eve from that album, hearing the Mule tune Gordon James, which doesn't get much of an airing these days. And the second night, as you say, at an all-killer, no-filler second set that ended with Mule's Falling Down, the Allman's End of the Line, Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, the Grateful Dead's China Doll, and then an encore pairing of Tom Petty's Southern Accents and Greg Allman's Immortal Melissa. Good run there. Good long emotional run.
Crossroads, you ever been here?
Warren loves his covers, as we know, and this was a great balance of cover tunes he's been doing forever, you know, combined with recent stuff, combined with a lot of great originals. And overall, for me, having seen him in so many contexts, part of the joy was that he was very relaxed. I mean, Warren can be a pretty freaking funny guy, and he was tossing off asides and chuckling, and it's a mood you don't always get from him, especially when, you know, mule sets are getting super heavy. Loved it. Hope we see more of it.
How was the crowd?
Crowd was way into it, helping him. He flubbed a few lyrics at one point, I think on the Almonds tune, Old Friend, and the crowd helped him remember, but he was very, very bantery. You know, Warren can be very businesslike up there.
Sure.
It was very loose, yeah. and fun, and it seemed like he was relaxing quite a bit.
And as you said, I really hope that there's more of this, and I think from what I've heard and from reactions like yours that it's very possible that he's going to be doing more of these things. So here's hoping for that. And another live music experience that sounded amazing was Lucas Nelson and Promise of the Real's performance at the Tiny Stephen Talk House out in the Hamptons on Sunday, August 4th. And speaking of Warren, he was on hand and contributed to a cover of Neil Young's Cortez the Killer. And then Jimmy Buffett was there as well, and he led Lucas and POTR through Margaritaville. There's video of both guest spots on jambase.com, so be sure to check it out. There's a bit of a bummer that we've got to discuss as part of the rundown. There's disappointing news out of the Almond Betts camp, band camp. Devon Almond had to undergo emergency surgery on July 30th during the group's European tour. And first, the band canceled their remaining dates in Europe and were expected to take the stage this month in North America. However, doctors advised Almond to take additional time to recover, and as such, the Almond Betts band postponed 31 North American tour dates, originally set to take place in August and November. The good news is that Devon is expected to make a full recovery, and the Almond Betts band will be back at it starting on October 18th in Mississippi. We'd like to send our best wishes to Almond in hopes that he gets well soon. We'll continue the rundown momentarily, but first, let Chad tell you about our sponsor, CBD Vermont.
CBD Vermont partners with organic farms in Vermont to produce organically grown hemp used in full-spectrum extracts that are available for sale at cbdvermont.com. Use the code JAMBASE, that's J-A-M-B-A-S-E, at checkout to get 15% off of all their products. CBD Vermont guarantees their farms a price per plant and provides cultivation support throughout the growing season. There are a lot of CBD products out there, so how do you know what you're getting? Well, CBD Vermont tests all of its extracts to ensure you're getting the right amount of CBD and other cannabinoids and no unwanted toxins. Plus, each batch is traced to the Vermont farm where it was grown and the hemp cultivar that was extracted. They recently launched an online store where you can buy Vermont-made CBD products, including oils, capsules, edibles, and topicals that have been fully vetted by the staff at CBD Vermont. I've mentioned before that I've been a proponent of the value of CBD for many years. Finding a source for CBD that I can trust hasn't been easy. But with CBD Vermont, I know that I'm getting high-quality products I can consistently rely on. CBD Vermont's variety of products are reliable, affordable, and effective. Go to cbdvermont.com and use the code JAMBASE, J-A-M-B-A-S-E, at checkout to get 15% off.
Thank you, Chad. Now, Chad, in addition to Warren, you recently caught upstarts Chris Forsythe and Garcia Peoples in concert. While I personally haven't seen those acts live, I do love what I've heard from their studio recordings. What did you think about their live sets?
So it's funny, Scotty. I've seen a lot of our jam scene stalwarts this year and on tour and everything, as all of us tend to do. Garcia Peoples, who came out of New Jersey and have been in breakout mode for a bit now, are actually the band that I've seen most this year.
Interesting.
And watching them break out, you know, on bills opening for Chris Province Brotherhood, Howl and Rain, and then of course paired with Chris Forsythe has been really exciting. They've been kind of described using this slippery concept of indie jam, which, you know, isn't a new thing, but kind of loosely refers to bands that split the difference between more of a jangly 80s, 90s indie rock and more of the 60s style, you know, psychedelic jammers that were the fathers of what we would consider the modern jam scene. And I don't think we need to get twisted up in knots defining things, but there's a common thread among a bunch of different and varied artists and bands coming up right now, especially here in the Northeast, that, you know, adventurously go after psychedelic rock with a really healthy portion of indie jangle and a love of long, highly improvised jams. Chris Forsyth, who we'll get to in a minute, is in that category. Dave Harrington, Riley Walker, stuff that comes from labels like Beyond Beyond is Beyond and is promoted on sites like NYC Taper. Garcia Peoples have a phenomenal album out this year called Natural Facts, just very sturdy and in some cases, you know, quite hummable tunes that they really like to stretch out live. And I have to name check Chris Forsyth, you know, not least for how often he and Garcia Peoples play together, but that he's in a similar vein. You know, he's been described sometimes kind of like what a mash of The Grateful Dead and Television might sound like. And I think that's a little cute, but it's jammy, it's very adventurous stuff that also hangs together. It doesn't just lapse into vamping or noise, you know, even when Forsyth, who's an extraordinary guitar player, is shredding. And I had the pleasure of seeing Chris Forsyth and Garcia Peoples together back in March at New Blue on the Lower East Side here in New York, kind of a locally legendary show now with a version of the other one they played together that was 19 minutes of heat. But then again, recently at the Market Hotel in Brooklyn from right at the end of July, that had a whole bunch of like-minded bands on the bill with, you know, some really superb opening sets from Weak Signal and Dire Wolves, and then Garcia People, and then Chris Forsyth with Garcia Peoples, roaring out of the gate with, you know, a version of Neil Young's Barstool Blues before heading into, you know, about an hour and a half of Forsyth's own compositions. And in particular, if you're a Forsyth novice, there's a tune that he's been jamming hard on recently called Technotop that Forsyth and Garcia Peoples have played a lot together a few times this year. It's a good place to start. It keeps getting more interesting and more expansive, and I think we're going to continue to hear a lot from all these guys. Fun stuff.
And there was a good amount of actual improvisation during the recent show that you saw where it was Garcia Peoples backing Forsyth.
There was. They've jammed together so many times at this point over the course of this year that they're really getting comfortable enough to stretch and not have it be you solo, now you solo, but actual, you know, double drums, layered guitars, almost truly like one band. They play kind of toe in the water type of songs at first that don't stretch all that long, and by the end of the night, you know, there was my 20-minute techno top toward the end. Very, very fun players, and I you know, I'm spoiled because, and we're spoiled, I should say, because we get to see them all the time here. But Garcia Peoples, anyway, are starting to head west a little bit more. Chris Forsyth is heading out more beyond his kind of home base of Philadelphia and up here. So these are fun folks to keep an eye on.
Excellent. I believe NYC Taper, which Chad mentioned before, I believe they just shared a recording of the show that Chad saw, so I highly recommend checking those guys out, and thanks to them for all that they do. And here's hoping there's much more from those two acts in our future. Chad, thank you so much for joining us. It was really a pleasure, and I'm sure this won't be your last time joining us on The Rundown. So thank you very much. And Chad's also got some exciting features in the works that you'll be reading soon. So thanks for listening, and now stay tuned for Tour Stories with Del McCurry.
You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment, and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood. where you get news from every source, where you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio, in addition to Jam On, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and more. Where you can listen to top comedy channels, such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix's A Joke Radio, and Sports Talk Radio from Barstool to ESPN and more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just a dollar. Visit SiriusXM.com/Jambase to see offer details and to subscribe and start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. And now here's my interview with Del McCurry. Hey, this is Andy. Since there was a bit of a technical issue with the recording I made of my interview with Del, we're going to start right in with his response to my question about what it was like to tour with Bill Monroe, the father of bluegrass.
Well, I'll tell you, back in the... I was touring with him in 63, and I was only there a year.
That was only 1 year.
Yeah, I started in February 63, and I left in February 64.
But so it was a solid year, yeah.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have left, but this fiddle player buddy of mine, we were both about the same age, his name's Billy Baker, and I mentioned to him one time, I had a job offer in California with the Golden State Boys. They had a bluegrass band out here, and so Billy said, hey, let's quit, Bill, and go out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I don't know if they want a fiddle player. They asked me to come out, but so I called the manager anyway, and the manager said, let us think about it for about 30 minutes. So he called back in 30 minutes and said, yeah, bring the fiddle player and come on. So but that's when I quit Bill Monroe. But I wanted to tell you a little story about Bill. You know, he didn't expect you, when you came in the band, to know all of his songs.
Okay.
He just, he figured, well, you'll know enough to get by while you're there learning, you know.
Sure. Learn on the fly.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. So one night, we came in off the road. We'd been on the road probably all week, and we came in on a Friday night or a Thursday night, and Bill told me, he said, you know, I want to do this gospel song on the Grand Ole Opry tomorrow night, Saturday night. We usually get in to do the Opry on the weekend, you know, mm-hmm. most of the time. Anyway, and it was entitled Wait a Little Longer, Please Jesus. It was a gospel song.
Okay.
And so I'd have to go up, and to get the words to his songs, I'd have to go up in the National Life and Accident Insurance Building there on 7th Avenue, because they had a library of all of the Opry acts, because they were a big sponsor,
okay,
of the Opry, and they had all of their records, all the artists'
sure,
records
sure.
in a library there, and you could go in and listen to them, but you couldn't take them out.
Okay.
Well, I thought, man, I got to go up there and learn to get the words to this song. Well, I went up and I found the record, and I took a pencil and piece of paper, and I copied all the words down. I was just living in a hotel then.
Wow.
And I took it back to the words back to the hotel, and I got my guitar out, and I learned the whole song. And the thing about it was, it had different courses, different verses had different courses, and that's the worst song to try to learn.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, I thought, well, I know this, you know. And of course, I could learn a song quicker back then than I can now. Anyway, we got on Opry that Saturday night, and I got kind of excited, and I got to singing part of this verse with that verse, and oh, things just weren't working. But I never stopped. I don't know if it rhymed, but I never did stop. And so it was the last part of a segment. So after we got done, they brought the curtain down, you know. It was like at the end of the first show, I think. And they brought the curtain down, and I thought, well, I guess I'll stick close to the chief and take my medicine.
Yeah.
Because I know he knew I messed up, you know. And so The only thing he said was, Dale, I never heard it sung that way.
A new arrangement.
That was why that was a mild thing out of Bill Monroe.
Was it?
Yeah. Just a little longer, please, Jesus. There's so many still wandering out in sin. Just a little longer, please, Jesus. A few more days to get our loved ones in.
So tell me what he was like.
You know, I always got along good with Bill. Now, a lot of musicians didn't, but he didn't like people that were lazy.
Sure.
He liked for you to get out there on stage and work hard with him, you know, when it was time to. And he didn't really, he wasn't looking at your professional part of it. He was just looking for you to get out there and work hard with him, you know, like on a duet if he's singing. He wants you to put out.
Okay.
I mean, and he could put out.
He was...
He was in his prime then. He was about 52, but he was still really in his prime, you know. And so I know musicians that came to work, and I could tell they weren't really that work happy.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't last long. He'd ride them.
Yeah.
He'd ride them till they left. He never actually, I think he fired a couple, but I don't remember any. But he would ride them until they got tired of that and they'd leave.
He didn't have to bother firing them. They are already out. Yeah,
yeah, really.
So why did you only stay for a year?
What was that?
Why did you only stay for a year?
Well, you know, I didn't really aim to go with him to start with. I was playing with this guitar player in Baltimore there. His name is Jack Cook, and he was an ex-bluegrass boy. He'd been there in the late 50s for about 3 years. Jack Cook.
And did Bill run him out?
No. Okay. No, I'll tell you what. He quit Bill because he was offered a job in D.C. Playing with a band that had a television show. It was big, you know, then.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was the Bluegrass Champs or the Stoneman family.
Okay, okay.
They had a TV show there, and they offered Jack a job. And, you know, that's what drawed him away from Bill Monroe, you know. So he came up there, and he didn't stay long because they lost their TV show. Then he went to Baltimore, and then he got his own band. That was the next move, and I was one of, I might have been his second banjo player. First one didn't last long, and then I got a job playing banjo with him. And, of course, Bill knew him, you know. He said, I'll go through there and get Jack to go with me to New York because it was, his guitar player quit.
Okay.
At that time, and he knew Jack would do that, so they took me along to play banjo with him, and that's how I met Bill. And I wasn't really trying to get a job, but eventually he wanted me to, he offered me a job, and I thought, you know, maybe I should do that. So, and I was single, you know, I went and I stayed that year, and like I said, this friend of mine, I would have stayed longer. Because I got along good with him.
Yeah.
But my fiddle player buddy, he wanted us to go to California.
Yeah.
That's the place you ought to be, right there.
Yeah, right? Here we are.
So I said, okay. And I told him, I said, you know what? I want to get married before I go. And this all happened within a week.
Oh, wow.
I quit Bill Monroe, got married, and was in California within a week.
Oh, wow. That's quite the life changes.
I know, and my wife, you know, she's
never still
been
here,
away from
right?
home. Yeah, yeah. She got homesick, and I never knew what that was, but she did.
And you were moving from PA out to California. That's
right.
That's about as far as you can go, too.
It was, you know.
Yeah.
And
did you know anybody out here
in California? Well, I knew those guys, some of the musicians.
Where'd you move to? L.A.
Yeah, I moved. Yeah. Down in Norwalk Downey.
Oh, okay, okay.
One of the suburbs down there. That's where our TV show was in Huntington Park.
Okay.
It was for that, this guy had a Dodge dealership, and he also had his TV show, Hal Worthington.
Hal Worthington.
He had that TV show, and a lot of people played it, you know, a lot of the West Coast bands, they played.
Sure.
Merle Haggard at the time.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
Buck Owens, you know.
All the Bakersfield guys?
Yeah, all the Bakersfield guys. They would play it, and some of the older people and guests would come through from the Grand Ole Opry, and they'd play, you know.
Sure.
It was a good thing to do. We had quite a bit of work, and he gave the band a new station wagon to travel in and all that, you know.
Fancy, yeah.
But my wife got homesick, and I just had to move back to the East Coast, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You did what the wife said. So what did you go back to doing then?
Well, I went back there, and I should tell you another story about it. We used to play a lot of shows in Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah.
When I was with Bill. Well, not a lot of shows, but it seemed like that was the most backward places to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Bill was from Kentucky.
Sure.
And we played some of those theaters without a sound system of any kind.
Oh, wow.
And
just Bill, using the acoustics of the room?
Yeah. It was like the screen was in there, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you play either in front of the screen or they'd roll it up.
Right, right.
Whatever. And then there was a stage. There was mm-hmm. a stage there. And Bill, he'd tell us boys, he'd say, now, he'd take a match pack and put it at a certain place on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He said, now, when it comes time for you to sing your part or the banjo player time for him.
Right, right.
You come up to that match pack because then they know you're in front. And you look at the audience. When you step up part of that, that's your microphone.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Hit your mark.
Yeah, yeah, hit that mark. Yeah. And that way people know you're out front then. Mm-hmm. You know, you're the one
To pay attention to.
That's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And we'd do that. And we did that a lot in Eastern Kentucky, man.
Yeah.
I remember, I'll tell you another story too. We left one time. He had a 59 Oldsmobile Super 88 station wagon. That's what we were riding in.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing had like 250,000 miles on it I came, man. You know? So I was driving one time. Then he got a bus later, but that's another story. But I was driving. We left Nashville and went down Chattanooga. And we're heading for Florida, I think, to play. Okay. And Bill Monroe said to me, he said, Adele, if you see a place, stop, get me a cup of coffee. Well, I saw a little stand along the road there,
mm-hmm.
or some kind of little restaurant or something. And you could go up to the window and order, you know.
Yeah.
So I pulled a car over, and I got out and went up to the, everybody might have been asleep, I don't know, but I went up to the window, and the lady said, did you know our president's been shot? And I said, no.
Wow.
So I had to give Bill Monroe the news, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I don't know what month that was now, but it was in 63.
Yeah, yeah. November, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think it was November, yeah.
Yeah, everybody says they know. That was alive then, says they know exactly where they were when that happened.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have such an incredible memory of that.
Yeah, I did.
That's wild.
Of course, it really made an impression on me, you know. And
I
knew I had to give Bill Monroe the news, and I don't remember what he said, but there's... I can't remember any more Bill Monroe stories, but let's see.
Well, you were saying before you have a Jerry Garcia story.
Yeah.
That involves Bill Monroe.
True. I'll tell you what. Now, we used to play a place in Hollywood called the Ash Grove.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard of
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, at that time, we played that two different times. We played it a week once, and then I remember mm-hmm. playing it 2 weeks one time. And anyway.
And this is with Bill Monroe?
Yeah, this
right? was. Okay. This is when you're a bluegrass boy.
They booked Bill, you know, to play it. And a lot of the musicians in that part of the country would come out, you know, they'd come to the show.
Yeah.
And I remember Roger Miller, he mm-hmm. came.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, he was on the West Coast, but he didn't have a hit yet.
Okay.
And he did have a hit before I left California to come home.
Oh, wow.
He did. Dang me.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I heard it all the way across the United States, you know. But this night we played in Ash Grove, and I'll tell you another guy that came in the same night was a guy named Gordon Terry.
Okay.
He was a fiddle player that played with Bill in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, he said, I'm trying out for Tarzan, the part in the movie.
Oh, yeah?
And he's big, broad-shouldered,
you know.
Real thick neck, you know.
Looked the part.
You did.
Literally.
He was really a handsome guy and tall.
Uh-huh.
And, but I learned later, this blonde-headed, big blonde-headed guy got it with long blonde hair. I don't know his name. And he came in there the same night. He said, I'm trying out for the part.
Uh-huh.
He said, wish me luck, and I did. But anyway, all those nights we would be there, Jerry Garcia, not all the nights, I don't think, but mm-hmm. Jerry came to those shows, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. The Dillards, okay. I stayed with those guys.
Oh, wow.
That was an experience, you know.
Yeah, sure.
They lived in Topanga Canyon, and three of them are still single. So they all lived in one house. Mm-hmm. They took me and the fiddle player home with them every night and go back down to Ash Grove.
Oh, wow.
You know, and anyway, Jerry told me, I saw him later. Mm-hmm. I didn't meet him then. But I saw him later, and he said, you know, I came to a lot of those shows, and he said, I wanted to be a bluegrass boy. You know, mm-hmm. he didn't know what he was going to do then at that time. David tells me a lot of the things that they did in those days, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, he said, and I said, man, why didn't you tell us? Because our banjo player quit while we were there in the middle of one of those. And it was Bill Keith.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He just, I thought he gave a notice. And I saw him in later years. And he said, no, I didn't. I just, something about he was in the reserves and he had to go back to Boston.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I figured, well, that's it. I'm just going back there. And so Bill told me, he said, do you know a banjo player we can get out here in California? And I said, I don't know nobody out here. You know? And so I said, I know a guy in PA, York uh-huh. County. I don't know if he'll come or not, but he was single, and he was type of guy that would just take off and go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, let's go call him. Well, he was staying in the Hollywood Hotel, Bill was, and we were in the lobby there, and he said, let's walk down the street. Well, we walked down the street to a phone booth.
Uh-huh.
No cell phones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we went in the phone booth, and I dialed up Bobby's number. His name is Bobby Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Bobby, a guy here wants to talk to you. And I said, so I just stepped out of the phone booth. There's only room for one person in there. You know? And Bill went in, and that. Of course, the cars were going up and down the street, and I couldn't hear what they were saying. Mm-hmm. And after a while, Bill come out and shut the door and started walking up the sidewalk, and I just walking with him. And he's a man of few words, you know, actually, mm-hmm. Bill was. And I said, well, Bill, what did he say? Oh, he'll be here tomorrow night. So that's how he'd hire people. It was really, he had so many musicians in his lifetime, you
oh,
know.
Oh, yeah.
Just, they just come and go, you know, and on his recordings, a lot of times he'd use guys that lived in Nashville.
Okay.
And guys that were already in that union. Now, he got me in that local, you know, and he uh-huh. got Bill Keith in that local. But some guys he wouldn't. He wouldn't. They'd just be the guys on the road with him, you know, and, mm-hmm. and they could play for the most part. But you had to be in that local to play the Opry.
Uh-huh.
The first show I did on the Opry with Bill, I just sang. They wouldn't let me play.
Oh, no kidding.
He said, now, you can't play, Dale, but I'll get you in your union next week. And so Jack Phelps, a guy that was on that old TV show in Nashville, he played guitar with Bill, and I uh-huh. sang, you know, and I don't know what to do with my hands, you know.
Yeah, right? Yeah, totally. So, and if I understand correctly, you were playing banjo when you first met
yeah.
Bill Monroe, but he was mm-hmm. the one that got you to switch to guitar,
yes.
correct? What was that discussion like?
Well, you know, that was one thing. It was when I went down there, see, he offered me a job on banjo,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I went to Nashville. If I'd have known about this guitar deal, I wouldn't have went. Because that's what I loved to do then was play banjo, uh-huh. you know.
Do you ever still play?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I haven't.
When do you think the last time you played a banjo was?
I'll tell you what. You know Sam Bush?
I do.
Well, Sam, me and Sam, we did, like me and David do, we were doing a lot of shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they started booking, my agent started booking a lot of shows for us,
uh-huh.
just the two of us. And
sure.
we did, I don't know, about a year and a half, you know.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, Sam said, now look. He's heard me play banjo years ago, you know. He
yeah.
said, now, look, I'll tell you what. I want you to play the banjo on a number or two while I play the fiddle.
Oh, okay.
We'll do guitar and mandolin and
uh-huh.
just duets and all like that.
Yeah.
But then I'll take the fiddle, and I want you to play banjo yeah. with me, backing me up.
Mm-hmm.
And take breaks. And I said, oh, man, Sam, I'm too old. I'm too stiff, you know.
Yeah, you got to
no,
be nimble
no,
for
can
that.
No, you do it. So... I got my old banjo out. My son Rob, he played it. It's a 1934 Gibson.
Yeah, great. Well, I knew he played, so I wondered if you ever, you know, sit around and pick with him.
Well, he was starting to play one when he was about 9. And I'd listen to him and I'd just guide him a little bit, you know, but getting back to with Sam, you know, I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll try it. I got my old banjo at home and I'll put some strings on it and see what I can do, see what I could play.
Yeah.
And I remembered Sally Gooden pretty well. And I thought, I'll just practice on that. So we did. We'd do that on every show we did, you know. And, of course, it didn't last too long, you know, about a year and a half. Yeah. And then after that, I just laid it up, haven't touched it since then, you know.
Wow.
I'm just into the guitar mainly, you know, now. And
you're a pretty good guitar player, though.
Thanks. singing.
You've gotten pretty good over the years, yeah. And you can sing pretty well, too, my friend. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, we can get you going. I want to thank you so much. This has been terrific. These are true tour stories. And
you know, there's some great stories, and I just can't pull any of them in for some reason, not right now.
Oh, you did terrific. Don't worry about that. We all, as the years go by, man, it gets harder and harder. I always joke. I try and find the gigabytes, you know. My memory card's full.
God, I don't know. Let's see. Well, I played with Don Reno, too, for a while. You know, he was the Earl Scruggs gets the credit, but those two guys came up together, you know. They really did, and Don... I'll tell you about what Don told me about him and Earl. They were the two major influences on banjo players in those days.
Definitely,
you know,
definitely.
Back in those days.
They still are.
Yeah, really. Right? That's true. Yeah. And they play so different. You know, even though they use a forward roll and other rolls, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But Don told me he was playing in a band in Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay.
And they played a little old radio show, what it was. And in those old stations, you know, they'd have a glass where you could look in the studio at the people that were playing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the sign above the door would say, have a red light. You can't go in. Well, he said, we'd do that show. He was playing with the brothers. What was, I can't remember their names.
The Leuven brothers?
How was that?
Leuven?
No.
No.
No, it was a bunch of guys from right there in Asheville. I can never remember those guys' names. They were really good.
I'll look it up afterwards and tell
everybody. Do that. You'll find out. That's kind of where Don got his start.
Okay.
But he said, I'd do the show, and then I'd put my banjo up, put it in a case, and by the time I wouldn't see this guy, because he's about my age.
Yeah.
They were both teenagers, you know?
Yeah.
And he thought, I'd talk to that guy. So by the time he'd put his banjo up, he'd go out and he'd be gone.
Oh, wow.
And but then I think it's like a Saturday show. And he said, this one time we got done with our show, and I thought, I'm just going to keep my banjo on and walk out there and catch him. Mm-hmm. And he went out and he met him. It was Earl Scruggs.
Yeah.
And he was watching their show. And eventually they became good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they traded banjos.
Oh, really?
And the one that Earl got was the Don Reno banjo, and the one that Don got was the Earl Scruggs banjo from back then. And, of course, Don Jr.'s got Don's now.
Okay.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
Don Jr. is, but...
So he's got Earl's old banjo, though.
I got Earl's old banjo,
that's,
you know.
That's cool.
It's a funny story. But those guys, they used to have banjo contests in Sunset Park and New River Ranch in Maryland, PA.
Okay.
And those guys would come and judge them.
Oh, wow.
Don Reno and Earl Scruggs.
Pretty good judges.
Yeah. And there's somebody got, I saw this. I never saw them, but I saw they had a video.
Mm-hmm.
A video of the two playing.
Oh, wow.
Twin, you know, they were twin and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know, now when I come to work for Don, after I quit Bill Monroe, I came to work for Don for a while.
Sure.
My brother Jerry played bass in that band.
Ah, okay.
And Bill Harrell was the guitar player and lead singer, and he had to go to the hospital for something.
Mm-hmm.
And Don wanted me to come and sing and play guitar with him, And then he got better, and I thought, well, it's time for me to go down. No, no, I want you to stay, you know, Don did.
Mm-hmm.
And we had three guitars in the band.
Oh, wow.
And I'd say, well, now, you want me to play slap rhythm or something like that? No, play just like you always do.
Yeah.
Just like you do. And then he'd say, now, me and you can do twin banjos. So,
okay.
There's another thing he wanted me to do. He had two all the time on the road with him.
Uh-huh.
So he'd say, now, just pick out a tune. It don't matter what it is. Just play it for me, and I'll just listen. And he said, then when I get done with that, he'd say, now, when I play with you, don't change what you just did.
Okay.
And I'll put harmony with every note you just did.
Oh, wow.
And he did.
Yeah, I bet.
He's really good,
awesome.
Man.
Yeah, I bet. That's awesome.
But I'll tell you another good story now on Don. At the time that I was working for him, now this was late 60s, maybe 68, he told me, he said, you know, I had to go to New York City this week. And I said, oh, you did? And he said, yeah. He said, Arthur Smith from Charlotte, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
called him Arthur Guitar Boogie Smith, so he wrote the boogie, you know.
Yeah.
He said he wanted me to go with him up there because me and him recorded a song in 1955 called Feudin' Banjos.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there's some boys cut that in a movie.
Oh, yeah?
And they didn't give us credit. They credited it themselves.
Uh-huh.
Or Warner Brothers did.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, he said, so Arthur Smith called me and he said, look, I'm coming to D.C. I want you to go with me to New York because that's where we're going to court. Well, Don, he said, okay, I'm not doing nothing until this weekend. I got to go out and play.
Mm-hmm.
So he came by and he got Don. They went up there to court. And the judge said, well, look, if you guys say you wrote this, can you play it now? And they said, well, no, we don't have nothing to play it on.
Yeah.
They left their instruments at home. You know?
Yeah.
Well, look, I'll send out and get some. Well, Don said, see, Arthur Smith played the tenor banjo,
okay,
with a flat pick,
uh-huh.
And Don played it three finger style, you
sure,
know, and they'd mock each other. And Don said they come back with a tenor banjo, and he brought me a five string with a neck about this long. It was a folk banjo, I reckon, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said we played it for the judge, and you know what? He awarded Arthur Smith that money, that back pay from Warner Brothers.
Wow.
What it was, the Warner Brothers lawyer said, Arthur Smith called the lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He said, hey, ain't no use fooling with us. We got too much money, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, wait a minute. You don't know me. And he got up there and won that case.
That's incredible.
He won that case.
It took him all the way to court.
Yeah, he did. And I knew the two boys that did it, because I used to play for Doug Tuckman on the, we used to play on a ship up there in New York City on, and those boys would come on their big Harleys.
Okay.
To my shows, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I knew them real
well.
Yeah. And I knew Don, too.
Yeah. That's terrific. That's cool.
But
I can't imagine nowadays a judge allowing a band to bring their instruments into the courtroom like that.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's cool.
Judge said, you know, if you can play it, he said, if you wrote that, you ought to be able to play it. Oh, we could play it if we had something to play it on.
Yeah.
They said.
just bring the instruments in.
Yeah, yeah. And he did. He brought them in there. Don said he sent a man out to get,
mm-hmm.
get the instruments for them to play. And, of course, they played that really good. They played it so fast.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. And it was great. All the notes were just as clean, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
and I had the record in 1955. It was released.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, we can wrap this up, Del. Thank you. I appreciate it. This has been so much fun for me.
Enjoyed it.
I had a great time watching you play today. Best of luck for everything in the future.
It's all right.
Thank you again.
I'd like to invite you to Delfest maybe next year if you have
I haven't been yet. This is my first High Sierra. I will make it a point to make it to Delfest as soon as I can.
Just tell Maria or my manager
in
Florida there, you know.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Then they'll put you right on the list.
I'd love that. Thank you, Del.
Yes, sir.
Cheers.
She got a one by kicking and coming back. Oh, baby, baby, where you gonna find a good man like me? Where you gonna find a good man like me?
Well, that's it for this episode of the Jambase Podcast. As noted, Jambase is pleased to be a media partner of the Osiris Podcast Network. Episode 43 has been sponsored by CBD Vermont and SiriusXM. Much love to Chad for taking part in the rundown and to Del for chatting with us. This episode and all others are produced by Jake Alexander, whose Clangin' and Banging Band provide our theme song. Finally, thanks to you, our listeners. Don't hesitate to hit us up at podcast@jambase.com with any comments, questions, and if you could take the time to leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever podcast provider you use, we'd appreciate it. That's it for now, so go see live music.